Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can study a variety of topics such as creative writing, human rights, and the arts. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to find love and to stay in love? And how do people survive the loss of love? The remarkably powerful stories of human experience captured since 2003 by the StoryCorps Oral History Project often touch on this most profound emotion, and a new collection of them edited to focus on romantic love in particular are included in a new book called All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. The author of that book is David Isay, founder of StoryCorps and winner of 5 Peabody Awards and a MacArthur Genius Grant. He's in town for an address tonight to Arts and Letters Live at the Dallas Museum of Art, and we're delighted that he could make time for us this afternoon. Dave, welcome to Think.
Hi, Chris. It's great to be back.
So the collection, I think, is really amazing here because it is about love, but it's not so much about people whose lives have just been an easy road the whole time. Yeah. And yet there's a lot of hope in here.
You know, it's funny. You hit it. The book just came out, and you write a book, and then it goes to the publisher for a year, and I read it again last week. And that's exactly what I thought. You know, when I read the book, I thought this is less a book about love stories than it is about hope. Because over and over again in these stories, you see people who think that the whole last section is called Found at Last, and it's people who think that they're never going to find love. And it just kind of sneaks up behind them and taps them on the back. So, and it's funny because I really appreciate you getting that. But I think of StoryCorps as a whole, in many ways, as a project about hope. We've done 40,000 interviews with 80,000 people. So these are kind of the 40 most remarkable love stories of the 40,000 we've collected. Every interview is two people in a booth with a facilitator who works for StoryCorps, who they call themselves they say that they bear witness to these interviews, but they do a lot of stuff. They run the equipment. They do a log of the interviews. They make people comfortable. They ask questions. And they spend a year, anywhere from 1 to 3 years, really collecting the wisdom of humanity, because that's the nature of what happens in the booth. And to a person, we've had more than 100 facilitators. And to a person, when they come back off the road, if you ask them what they've learned, they'll say that people are basically good. Now, I know it may be somewhat of a self-selecting crowd who comes to the StoryCorps booth, but, I mean, we have a real, real wide range of people who come to StoryCorps. So, when you hear these stories, it's the stories of everyday people, and the ones we select, I think, are, we're looking for it's those stories that have this kind of – I think of these stories in this book as kind of like poetry. It's like distilling down the language of people into the poetry of the language. And, you really hear people living lives at their best. And when you take – you wouldn't know it from watching 24-hour cable news or reading the paper, but around us, and there are lots and lots of people living lives of, decency and kindness. And I hear a lot from people that when they hear StoryCorps stories on the radio that they cry. And many of them aren't sad. I think it's because you're hearing kind of humanity at its best, and you're sort of walking on holy ground when you hear that.
No, it's funny. Having you in studio today, I'm concerned about that myself, because when it comes on Friday mornings here on the radio, I'm doing my makeup in the bathroom and I have to stop and go get another cup of coffee or something, because I often know that I'm just going to be wasting my time.
Well, I've been on the road for now about a week, and there's lots of I hear lots of comments about people driving and swerving off the road kind of thing. So that's of some concern.
Well, let's start by playing a story that is really just a kismet. And it's such an interesting – I was going through the book that and we were going to pick some cuts. And the story of Rachel and Ruben Salazar is just so unbelievable that it's hard to forget.
Yeah. This is a couple in Waco who met. He was based in Waco, and she was in Thailand.
She was in Thailand.
Yeah, and they had the same email address, basically, and he got an email that was meant for her, and they ended up falling in love. And we'll listen to the story, but I should say that after people listen to it, you can also go to the StoryCorps website, and we've done an animated version of it as well if you want to see what they look like.
Oh, cool.
I get to work. First thing I do is turn on my email, and I discovered this one. I didn't know who it was from.
My coworker sent you that email by mistake.
And I was like, here's another R.P. Salazar. Imagine that. And so I forwarded it. I wrote a little message. "Hi, Rachel. It seems as if this message came to me instead of you. I'm in Waco, Texas, USA. Have a great day. P.S. How's the weather there in Bangkok?"
I replied to you, "Weather in Bangkok is lovely. Gracias, Rachel."
So began a chain of emails.
The first couple of emails, you started describing yourself, and that kind of encouraged me to be open about myself, too.
I was excited that this person is halfway around the world. It's kind of like sending a letter in a bottle. I happened to hover my mouse over your name on one of those emails, and a picture of you popped up. I was like, wow, she's really beautiful. How can I make this picture bigger? I would stay up late at night, which was your morning, and we would chat for like 4 or 5 hours.
You had started to play an important role in my life even before I consciously realized it. I knew that I was falling in love, but there's still that tiny little bit of doubt that this might not work because we're 8,000 miles away from each other. But at some point, I finalized my plans to visit the U.S.
And you didn't tell anyone?
Because everyone would tell me, "You're foolish to go halfway across the world to meet some strange guy you have not met. That would be crazy."
And on my end, every relative, every friend, coworker, everyone knew.
We were together for 8 days.
We were dancing one night, and you mentioned something to the fact that...
I said that you were the sweetest guy I've ever met.
I knew right at that moment, I need to say something or do something so that I don't lose her. And so I got on my knee and asked you to marry me.
Deep in my heart, I knew it was coming, and it was the right thing, and it was the best thing.
People didn't believe me when I told them I proposed to Rachel. Some of them had second thoughts for me, followed by 5 minutes of laughter.
They now all tell us, "You're perfect for each other. You found the right match."
That was Rachel and Ruben Salazar talking about their unusual meeting and courtship and romance. My guest this hour is David Isay, who is StoryCorps founder. If you'd like to join our conversation this hour, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. They're a married couple. They seem to communicate really well. There are times when when StoryCorps invites in people who maybe have not ever had these conversations before. You can picture them telling the story 1,000 times.
Right.
Other people have never spoken to each other about these things before.
Well, I mean, I think what you see in these 40-minute sessions is even people who communicate well with each other, and you know this from sitting across the table from me, the microphone gives you the license to have conversations you don't normally get to have and mm-hmm. ask questions you don't normally get to have. So I guarantee that in every one of those 40,000 interviews, no matter how well you know the person who you're sitting across from, you're going to find out something that you didn't know. You know, I'm very close to my mom, and I interviewed her maybe the third year of StoryCorps. We opened in 2003. And when I walked out of the booth, the only things I knew walking out that I'd known coming in were the date and what her name was. Everything else was new. So,
wow.
But, you know, because these are the kind of questions that we just don't take the time to ask. You know, many people ask kind of big life questions. How do you want to be remembered? What are the most important lessons you've learned in life? So, I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I almost don't know if I could do that with my parents. We get along great and they're fantastic people. But there are certain places we don't go in casual conversation.
Well, you should try. You'd be surprised. You know, the facilitators call it the, you know, they always talk about kind of the miracle of the booth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are very comfortable. It's interesting. You know, at the end of the interview, a CD goes home with you and another one goes to the Library of Congress. And, you know, what happens in the booth is extremely intimate from the very first day. And when StoryCorps started, you know, I thought that we would – at the end of the interview, we are a public service, a human service. So you come in, you do an interview, you've had a great experience. That's great. At the end, you sign a release. If you don't sign it, you walk away with both copies of the interview. There's no record you ever came. You had a great experience. We couldn't be happier. Hmm. And I thought we'd see a compliance rate in the 60-70% because of what was being said. And, you know, in the last 8 years, the compliance rate is over 99.5%, which I think speaks to the fact that – people want to leave this legacy. You know, it goes to the Library of Congress. You know, your great-great-great-great-grandchildren can someday get to know you. And it speaks to the fact that people, you know, people want to be heard. And it's, I think what StoryCorps, that interview experience does is remind people that their lives matter. And that's an important message for people.
And it's even more profound when people are discussing things that are not necessarily easy to talk about. We have a clip here of the recording by Max Voles.
Mm-hmm.
This is a recording that I've actually have only heard once when it was broadcast. But Max and his wife were stationed, if I'm not mistaken, in Iraq, mm-hmm. And I think he tells the story of when she died.
We deployed in 2003. We were in the same unit, and she ripped bombs apart by hand in Iraq, just like I did. There was no being scared, no doubt, no, I might die. We never talked about that. But she died on an incident that I sent her on. That night, she was at a different base, and I tried to talk to her on the phone before she went, just to tell her, like, an extra be careful. But she was already on her way to take care of it, so I didn't get to. Her wounds were severe. One leg was blown off, and she was in a medically induced coma when I got to the hospital. I talked to her the whole time she was in there. The nurses were telling me to talk to her because they assured me that they had seen people come out of comas before and that they remembered hearing things that people said. I mean, what are you going to tell your wife who's dying? That you love her and you don't want her to die. But I knew she was dead a long time before the doctors stopped working on her. You hold someone's hand and then it feels different. I called her parents. You know, I didn't want it to be a stranger knocking on the door in an army suit. I told them that she died in my arms 10 minutes ago. She did something that most people weren't willing to do, and I don't want people to think that because she was killed while she was working that she was bad at her job or that she died because she was a girl. She did the same job that guys who think they're tough do. And she did it just as good as I did, and I think I'm the best that there is. I got married to her when I was 25. Our plan was to retire from the Army. Now I'm 36, and I still don't have a plan. I am an Army widower. I don't think there's very many of us. And when I receive a condolence letter from a high-ranking government official that says, Mrs. Volz, we're sorry for the loss of your husband, it just makes it seem like nobody knows we exist.
You know, there's so much in that piece with Max Volz, Dave, that there's so much nuance that you don't necessarily get from even the very best war correspondents. There's this love and this pride and this regret. I mean, did you realize the historic value of this beyond the idea that we would hear the voices of 21st century Americans?
Well, I think that It's interesting. I was just talking about this last night a little bit. I mean, first of all, I think there's enormous value for families who can have a record of their ancestors. But I do think that this paints even in this book. I mean, so many kind of historic milestones are hit. I mean, you have lots of 9/11 stories, stories about World War II, Vietnam, AIDS. And, you know, Studs Terkel, who was the great oral historian from Chicago who cut the ribbon on our first booth 8 years ago and has since passed away. He was in his 90s when he cut the ribbon, was the great spoke often about, you know, bottom up history through the voices of everyday people. And so often it's, you know, history is from statesmen and politicians. And there's, I think, just a great value and texture to hearing about history through everyday people's voices. When Studs cut the ribbon on our first booth at Grand Central Station, he said, you know, we know who the architect of Grand Central was, but who is it who laid these floors, who built these walls? Those are the stories you must get, and we've worked very hard to try and get those stories in the years since.
StoryCorps founder David Isay is my guest. His new book is called All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. He'll be speaking tonight at Arts and Letters Live at the Dallas Museum of Art. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. We do have lines open now. Or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think Gone KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is StoryCorps founder David Isay. He's got a new book out called All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps, and he'll be speaking tonight to Arts and Letters Live at the Dallas Museum of Art. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. I'm curious, Dave, how often someone is brought reluctantly to the booth saying, well, I really have nothing to say. There's nothing interesting in my life that anybody would care about.
You're asking very good questions, I have to say. Yeah, so that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. I have to say, you know, when we – I was in L.A. a couple of nights ago and someone raised their hand and said, you know, you were here a month ago. We have these mobile booths that travel the country. And I called, you know, within 30 seconds after reservations opened up and I was number 900 on the waiting list.
Wow.
So people really are very careful about who they bring to the booth. But there are times that, you know, there's definitely a grandmother, grandfather who is reluctant. And, you know, it's funny because those are the people who most often at the end of the 40 minutes you have to drag out by their ears, you know. There's something about – I think that when you're with, say, a grandparent who's grumpy or says, I don't want to tell you that story again or whatever it is, there's something about having the facilitator in the corner. You know, you'll often see them after they say that turn to the facilitator who kind of acts as the ears of the world, mm-hmm. and then they just launch into it. So, you know, it's a tribute to the amazing staff at StoryCorps, but we've had 40,000 interviews, and many of them are very, very difficult. You know, we have a special initiative where everyone who lost a loved one on 9/11 comes to StoryCorps to leave a record of their life. We have an Alzheimer's initiative, an initiative for people in hospice and palliative care. And, you know, not one of those interviews has gone bad. And I think it's just because of the, you know, that the care and the hard work and kind of discipline that the staff uses to make sure that this is a good public service for people.
Do you have to provide special sort of nurturing for the facilitators? It seems like at the end of some days, they might just want to hit the nearest bar and you know, unwind.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a really hard job. And we give them they're hired because they're great listeners, and we mm-hmm. get 1,000 qualified applications for every facilitator position, and this is before the recession hit. But we give them access to counseling, which they often need. And we also find that, you know, after we used to – 3 years is about the most time that someone can spend as a facilitator before they burn out. So that's the longest that someone can serve. But, you know, it's a pretty amazing life. You know, they're traveling the country collecting the wisdom of humanity. So it's kind of a cool thing.
Is it mostly younger people that take this?
No,
on?
It's a very diverse group, age-wise and every other way. It's the whole spectrum.
I want to play next the story of Honey and Elliot Ryken, who this is not one of the more difficult stories. It's just really, really charming. They're this adorable couple.
Yeah. Honey was a twin with a woman named Bunny, and Elliot had a twin identical named Danny, both of them identical. This is a Brooklyn story. And they met when they were kids in the Catskills. He was working in a band, and he and his brother were in a band, and Bunny and Honey were waitresses, and this is them.
When we met, you and your sister couldn't tell us apart, and we couldn't tell you two apart.
But by the end of the summer, there was no chance of separating us. And we had a double wedding. You and I were married the same day as Bunny and Danny were married. And it was two brides, two grooms, one set of parents for each. The gowns were identical gowns. The flowers were identical.
We both went on our honeymoon to Miami Beach by different trains.
Yeah, so people
wouldn't be so obvious that people be staring at us. You know,
yeah, the twins that married the twins.
What did you think about marrying me many years ago?
You bowled me over with your way of kissing and the way you hold me when we dance. You're not a fantastic dancer, but you hold me fantastically, and I feel it. It's genuine. You're just not phony. I don't think you have a phony bone in your body. And I never thought anybody lasts this many years.
Like just yesterday, it was our 50th anniversary.
Yeah, now it's 11 years after that.
Yeah.
I never feel, what will he do if I die first? You know how to open tuna fish. You know how to smear it with mayonnaise. You will not fall apart. You'll feel sad when I'm gone, but you'll manage, and that makes me feel very good. thank you for being you, Elliot. You made my life complete.
And I say the same. You made my life complete. And hope we go on for another 50 years.
I'll take 5 good ones. 5 good ones. And I'll say thank you, God.
Honey and Elliot Ryken from StoryCorps. You know, you listen to that piece, and it also reminds me, in addition to being just the most charming individuals, we're losing in this country those regional accents as we all get more mobile. Yeah. I mean, I actually was raised in Long Island, and I don't talk that way anymore, right. and it's nice to have a record of that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. There are a lot of people who come to us with research requests for the StoryCorps interviews, and a lot of them are linguists, are linguists who are studying accents.
It's interesting to think that someday people will use these for purposes other than simply their content.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of the uses, you know, I don't think we can even imagine what they're going to be. Yeah.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now. We have Ken on the line in Parker County. Hey, Ken.
Hi. I got one of my questions answered. I kind of got in on after you started because I was out of my vehicle. But anyhow, I take it that your project is still ongoing. Is there anywhere that I can get a breakdown of your scheduled stops, and what are the parameters of you know, participating in this project?
Thanks for your call.
So, Ken, you can go to our website, which is storycorps.org, and find out where we are. I think we're in Austin right now, although we may be closing down soon. I think we're actually in Texas over the next bunch of months. I can't remember the schedule exactly.
We'll link to that on our page.
Great. So and we have booths in Atlanta, New York, and San Francisco. And the parameters are you have to make a reservation. You bring someone who – most people bring someone who matters to them. And the parameter is that you have the conversation that you want to have. Most people prepare. We have something on our website called Best Questions, which has the 10 most frequently asked questions and then hundreds of other questions. And you can choose which ones you want and put them in the right order and print them out. But the trick is really to ask the question you want to ask of this person who means something to you. I mean, I think in many ways what StoryCorps is about is bringing someone who's been important to your life to this booth and telling them how much they mean to you by asking them these questions. Who are you? How do you want to be remembered? What have you learned in life?
Are there particular dynamics? Does it work best when it's a grandparent and a grandchild? Or I mean, obviously, it can work beautifully regardless. But yeah. I wonder if there are things that have struck you as really effective.
Nope. I mean, I think it's just we have had every permutation of human being in the booth. Mm-hmm. And you can have 2 young people in the booth having a conversation. You can have, intergenerational, 100-year-old and a grandchild. It's you never know what's going to happen. I mean, it's just about when the interviews that are not as good, and this happens rarely, is sometimes someone will show up with to read their own biography, like mm-hmm. they'll bring it with them. That doesn't work. It doesn't work to talk about your CV. What does work is when people just have an honest conversation. I think of StoryCorps as less a project about storytelling and more a project about listening. And when the person who's doing the interview is listening closely and carefully, really amazing things happen in that booth.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Mike in Argyle. Hey, Mike.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, if you look at our society's past, and ask what story it is. It's sort of one of immigration, adventure, overcoming. If we took all of these stories in StoryCorps and fed that through IBM's Watson, I wonder what it would say about our story today and where we're headed.
Well, that's a good question, Mike. You know, I think that because of the nature of what happens in a StoryCorps booth, you have these 40 minutes and people think of it as if I had 40 minutes left to live, what would I want to say? So it's the great themes of human existence that get talked about. That's family and death and love, and the greatest theme of all is definitely love. I mean, it's come up in every one of the 40,000 interviews. This book is romantic love. That's not every interview. But, I think that if you put this through that IBM machine, what you would find is that we share as a country much more in common than we might think watching the news, and that we should and it doesn't matter where you are politically or where you are in the country, that there are a lot of shared values. And, you know, I think the message of StoryCorps as a whole is that, you know, every life matters, and that we should, you know, we would be a better and stronger country if we spent more time listening to each other and less time screaming at each other.
It's fascinating, too, that, you know, we think that we care about celebrities and politicians and things like that. But these stories sometimes of real people end up reverberating in ways that gossip never does.
Yeah. No, I agree. You know, I think that I saw a headline a couple days ago coming out of some of the celebrity breakup things saying love is dead, you know, and you know, I think about reality TV also, you know, and there's nothing that's all, you know, phony, fake. And I think the power of StoryCorps is that it's authentic. Nobody comes to StoryCorps to get rich. Nobody comes to get famous. And, you know, these stories are the real American story. I mean, I think it's human nature to kind of stop and look at a car crash, and that's what is the whole celebrity and reality TV. But, you know, there's something to be said for spending a little time focusing on what's real and what's important as well.
I want to play next the clip that we have of Paul Wilson and Marty Smith. And this is a very elderly gentleman talking to his middle-aged daughter about his late wife.
Yeah, this takes place in Wichita, Kansas. And the interview is done there, and he's remembering when he met the mother of the woman who's interviewing him. He was working in an office building on the top floor in Wichita.
One day I was waiting in the lobby for the elevator. The door slid aside, and there she stood. The prettiest girl I had ever seen. She was the operator. There were three or four other people on the elevator, and I was the last one on floor number 10. And she opened the door, and I said, thank you. And she said, you're welcome. That was the total conversation, that first contact. Of course, in the next few days, I saw her. But I was so backward and bashful that I didn't say anything to her except 10. She said, yes, I know. Thank goodness she broke the ice. She said, do you know where you can get some good chop suey? How about that for an opening? I said, sure. The cafe across the street is a Chinese cafe. They serve chop suey.
I sensed that she set that up.
I realized later she did. When I said I eat there every day, she said, oh. I realized I had an opening. And we had chop suey, and we got acquainted. I found out her name was Wilma. She found out my name was Paul. I found out that she was divorced and had a 2-year-old girl. She found out I was about to be drafted. Well, that wasn't good. Well, do you know what? I think it was 2 days later she brought that little girl downtown.
This is Barbara.
This was Barbara.
She was my older sister.
That's right. Barbara was 2 years old. She had a little red snowsuit, white fur hat, white fur muff that she was proud of. And when her mother introduced me to her, she held her arms out to me, and I was done for. Well, I did go away to war. Your mother waited for me 3 years. We got married right there in my mother's living room, and we had a 63-year honeymoon. And as you often say to me, when we part company, you say, life is good. And I have to think, yeah, life is good, even though I've lost my sweetheart.
Who was it that said the best thing a man can do for his children is to love their mother?
I did my best.
You did.
We were real lovers. And every day is a memorial for her.
That's Paul Wilson and Marty Smith on StoryCorps. My guest this hour is StoryCorps founder David Isay. That is one of those that it's hard for me to listen to without, you know, getting choked up. And not because it's sad, because it's really a beautiful story. Does everybody turn into a good storyteller in this environment?
No. And I, you know, I also love this piece. I think I'll play it tonight at the event. And it's, you know, it's the poetry and the, you know, the, when you listen to his voice, you know, the beauty of radio is that, you know, the so much is contained in the human voice, mm-hmm. and you can really phony. You cannot be. You can read phoniness on the radio, and you can read authenticity. And that was just the honesty and the poetry in his voice. We've done. We see every interview as equally valuable. We see it as a sacred moment in people's lives. But you know, I think that for any individual family, if you interviewed your grandfather, that would be. Many pieces of that would be more interesting than anything else that we broadcast, but that may not be true for a wider audience. So there are some interviews, and we excerpt 3 minutes out of one out of every 300, 400, 500 interviews, and that's what gets broadcast or ends up in a book. And those are stories that have this kind of universal quality that makes them appropriate to share with a larger audience.
The editing process has to be just incredibly challenging because you have to have it explain itself in many ways.
It's fun. The editing process is fun. Mm-hmm. Fundraising is challenging. Yeah. Editing is fun. Yeah, I mean, I was a documentary maker for many, 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 many years before starting StoryCorps. So that's kind of the core. The storytelling piece is the core competency of the organization in many ways, although we see ourselves now as a social service organization. I think that when you're editing – and I should say that editing for a book and editing for audio are very different. It's really I've been doing books for a long time, and you – a transcription that a straight transcription of the piece you just heard would not work. What works on audio and what works on the page is different. So when we put together a book, if anything's aired on the radio, we have to put those voices out of our head and mm-hmm. read it flat off the transcript and edit that down. I think that what we're looking for are those moments that are kind of electric, and that's what we edit. And it's interesting, as I travel the country on this tour, I get to meet people from the book. And what's amazing to me, last night I met a couple who – I was in Denver, and I met a couple who got married in Iraq. The night before that, there was a story from Seattle of a woman who taking care of her husband with Alzheimer's disease. And the stories, what you read in this book, really captures the spirit of the people when you actually meet them, which makes me feel very good. So what we're doing is we're distilling it down to the poetry, but also staying very true to the nature of the interview and the personality of the people who are having this conversation.
StoryCorps founder David Isay is my guest. His new book is called All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. He's in town to speak tonight to Arts and Letters Live at the Dallas Museum of Art. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is StoryCorps founder David Isay. His new book is called All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. He'll be speaking tonight to Arts and Letters Live at the Dallas Museum of Art. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372 or drop an email to think@kera.org. So, Dave, you alluded to this earlier. How do you pay for this? We just finished a fundraising campaign reminding people how expensive microphones are and all this equipment, and we don't go anywhere, and we don't do, 40,000 interviews over the course of 8 years.
Don't ask. I used to be a documentary maker, and now I am a full-time fundraiser 24 hours a day. It's very different than what I expected, but I believe in StoryCorps and all the people who work at StoryCorps. We're now about 120 people believe in this with every cell in our body, and what we're trying to do is build StoryCorps into a national institution that we hope will someday touch the lives of every American family and gets woven into the fabric of this country and moves the needle towards becoming a country that listens better and recognizes the value in everybody's life and all those good things. So we get some money from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is great for us, although quite dangerous, because the Corporation for Public Broadcasting obviously is under attack.
Yes, I'm aware.
As you well know. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't for CPB, there would be no StoryCorps. Mm-hmm. We get foundation money, but we don't fit in. What we're doing is, as we were talking off the air, that it's very simple, but nobody's ever tried anything like this before. So we don't fit into foundation guidelines. So we get some discretionary money. from foundations, but that's also fairly difficult. And then everyone who participates in StoryCorps becomes an alumna, and we ask them to help support us. But we put a lot of effort to making sure that we serve people, poor people. And so the more successful we are, the worse we're going to do with fundraising, because obviously it's harder for people who are having, you know, challenges with money to contribute. So we just work very, very hard and run a very, very lean and mean operation. I think as I said, when I, you know, that we cannot come close to meeting the demand for StoryCorps, and we're just going to keep working 365 days a year until we can get there.
When you describe yourself as a full-time fundraiser, for a guy with the soul of a producer who loves this project for the soul of it, it has to be a sacrifice.
Well, you know, I feel lucky because, you know, I feel like StoryCorps is my calling. And there, you know, to be able to work on something that's your calling is a privilege, you know. And I wake up every morning. You know, I used to work very hard making documentaries. But this is harder than anything I ever could have imagined. But when you wake up in a project like StoryCorps is one of those things that everything about it makes people's lives better. There is no downside to it, whether it's the interview experience or the broadcast. Everything about it helps people, makes people's lives better. And I think, you know, has a positive impact on this country. And, you know, when you can wake up in the morning and know what you're doing, it does nothing but good for people. That's a really good feeling.
So yeah. Are you the rare media property that does not receive angry emails on a regular basis?
We don't.
Yeah, wow.
We don't.
That's pretty remarkable.
You know, we get, the whole thing has been kind of magical. You know, we get emails every day from people saying the 40 minutes they spent in the booth was among the most important 40 minutes in their lives. And we get a lot of emails from people saying that when they listen to the stories on, you know, Friday morning, they may not go to church, they may not go to temple, but for them, that's like going to, you know, that's like their religious experience to some extent, which is kind of interesting. Unexpected.
Let's go back to the phones now at 800-933-5372. We have Jeremy on the line in Dallas. Hey, Jeremy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You may have already discussed this, and if so, I apologize, but I'm just curious to know, do many of these interviews result in, like, the revelation of some deep, dark family secret that, you know, until then had not been, you know, discussed? And is that a phenomenon that appears quite often in these interviews or not at all? And I'll listen off the air for the response.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jeremy. It's a good question. You know, I had fears of when StoryCorps opened of like kind of Jerry Springer moments and people pulling out guns or knives and killing each other in the booth. The people talk about things they haven't talked about before. There's not a lot of deep, dark family secrets coming out. People do not use the booth to kind of accuse someone else of something that's happened in the past. What most people do, I said this earlier, that because it's so hard to get a slot at the booth, people tend to bring that person who's like been the angel in their life. And not someone who you're looking to, you know, kind of bring up stuff that's very painful. So we don't see a lot of that. And that's been another surprise. But I think I don't think that's what the purpose of the booth is.
Is there a typical arc? Like, do they start with questions that maybe don't mean so much and then get into something really profound and then at the end they sort of taper off?
What the facilitators always tell people is it's a 40-minute interview, and they say you want to start with the question, that question you want to know the most at the beginning, because the 40 minutes go by so fast. Mm-hmm. So it starts with a bang and usually, you know, kind of goes along that way for 40 minutes. Everybody says the 40 minutes feels very, very short.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can also send email to think@kera.org, which is where we hear from Mel in Dallas. Mel writes, someday archaeologists will study our generation and discover your archives and will know us better than we know ourselves.
Well, you know, it's funny. That's a good point. And, people have said that if an alien, you know, aliens came down to Earth and what they heard was StoryCorps, it would give a much better impression of who we are than if they watched TV or, you know, read the newspaper. So this would be – let's hope that that someday people go through this stuff to understand who we really were.
Let's go next to the recording that we have of Peter Hedden and Jacqueline.
Yeah, this is the story we aired just last week on NPR. And I remember reading this when I was sitting in reading the transcript for the book before, obviously, I'd heard the tape, and just thinking that this was not believing. I was sitting in a hotel lobby, and I just could not believe how this story was unfolding. And it's this 40-year tale. We were actually just talking about it in the green room. One of your previous guests had heard it last week and was talking about it. It's this love story between a guy named Peter Hedden and Hayden and Jackie. They met when they were teenagers. He saw her at a roller skating rink on an army base, and he pursued her for the next 40 years through wars and across continents, and this is their story.
I had tried to call him off and on over the years, and I'd always call the operator and say, "Do you have a T.P. Hayden?" And she'd say, "No." And then in 98, I had made up my mind, I am just out of here. I'm so miserable. I'm so unhappy. So I said, "Well, nobody ever loved me but Peter. I'm going to go see if I can find him one more time." And the operator said, "I've got a T.P. Hayden in White Plains." Then I said, "Oh, my God, that's him." I said, "I have been trying to find this person for 30 years. It's the love of my life." She said, "Do you want me to dial a number for you?" I said, "Yeah, you can dial a number." She said, "Can I stay on the line?" I said, "I don't care what you do."
And the phone rang. And she said, "Do you know who this is?" I said, "Yeah, I know exactly who this is." She said, "I bet you're mad at me." I said, "No, matter of fact, I'm still in love with you." It's just sad the time we lost. But I got her back. So I won, you know. And she's just as beautiful as she was when she's 15.
That is the story of Peter Hayden and Jacqueline. It is amazing to think about people holding on to hope. And there are several stories like this throughout the book. But it makes you think that there are people all over the country that are hoping for something to happen and waiting and still kind of against all odds, believing it's possible.
And I think that the message of this book is that it always is possible and that you should never give up hope. And, that's one message. And the other one is that, you know, I think that you get from this book is that love is worth any sacrifice. You know, when we're just when we're dust, when everything else is melted away, all that's left is love, you know. And so those are pretty important messages.
Do you find people who find out what you do for a living instantly want to tell you their story outside of the booth or any formalized process?
No, not. I mean, I think what most people say to me is when they hear what I do is, I wish I had interviewed this person or that person, but I waited too long and now they're gone. And I hear that, multiple times every day wherever I go. And, another lesson of story, the big story core, is that you want to take the time to have these conversations, even if you don't do it through StoryCorps, to, tell the people who meet. And this is a big part of StoryCorps. It's telling the people who mean a lot to you how much they mean to you. And we think that people know, but they don't always know. And that's one of the – I hope one of the lessons of StoryCorps, because another – life is fragile and it's just true. And you read that in these stories all the time, And you want to kind of, seize the day and remember what's really important and have those conversations with the people who matter to you.
And you say, tell them that they matter to you. There's also like this extraordinary respect that comes from simply asking people to tell you what they're thinking.
Yeah. No, it's a real act of it is, and it's an act of generosity. It's an act of love, and when I had made radio documentaries for many years, that's what I saw when I was. I started having people talk to each other in these documentaries, and saw how much it meant to people to be asked these questions. And I think that I was talking. I think that for people who are the people who are the farthest from kind of the mainstream, who feel like their lives don't matter, that act is even more important to have someone come up and say, like, your life does matter. It matters to me. It matters to the world.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Michael on the line in Dallas. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how are y'all?
Very well, thanks.
Enjoy your show every day.
Thank you.
I'm a photographer, lifelong photographer. I was at the Martin Luther King funeral, working for Channel 4 at the time. But out of all the negatives that I have five or six that I really enjoy as being very personal negatives to me. And one of them is at Morehouse College when Julianne Bond was speaking during the eulogy for Martin Luther King. And there was a lady there in a white hat, very, very distinguished-looking lady, and she had three little kids. And the kids noticed me taking pictures, and so I have this negative, this photograph, black and white, of two of the kids just eyeballing me right into the lens, and the third one is sound asleep on the lady's lap. And I have tried to find these people, and I haven't been successful. And now my question is where should I go to try to find these people? The kids are going to be 45 years old max, and the mother's going to be like 75.
Any thoughts on that, Dave?
Well, I think that sounds like it's a great story. I think you should find a newspaper who would run the picture and ask. And do a story about the fact that you're looking for these folks. And then once you find them, then you should do a StoryCorps interview.
How did you make decisions about the pieces that would be illustrated with, I guess you have a variety of different animations?
Yeah, well, they're all the same animators.
They are, okay.
And we started this 2 years ago. And I'll show some of these animations tonight, which I think are pretty gorgeous. And, you know, as we kind of push our way and kind of try and deepen our impact in the country, one of the things we're doing is starting an education program in high schools. We're just piloting it, but we're in some of the worst high schools in the country. And it's a project that lets kids hear their own stories and learn how to do these interviews and basically connect them with their teachers. It's all kind of keyed to the standards and, you know, tells them that their stories and their lives and their families' lives matter. So it's pretty powerful. And I knew that when we got into schools with teenagers that audio was going to be a challenge. So I started creating these animations. We started creating these animations, kind of a gateway drug to get kids like engaged in these stories. The animators who are brilliant helped figure out what stories would be added to with a visual element. And you know, it's interesting because what works really well often visually with these animations is funny stories. It makes the funny stories funnier, you know. And I think that in some cases, you know, stories that are somewhat sad actually work very well in radio and not so well with animation. So,
So I guess it's just a matter of deciding the ones that really work that way and moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think what they're looking for places where they can add, you know, depth and dimension to the stories.
So you want this to keep going forever. Do you have like a maximum number that you imagine will someday be in this archive?
I have no idea. No, I don't know. You know, it's not so much the number of interviews we do. It's whether, you know, again, these become kind of ingrained in the culture. And hopefully someday, you know, I think people who listen to public radio know about StoryCorps and people in some of the communities we reach out to know about it. But there's a huge swath of this country that doesn't know. And that's our job right now, to let them know what we're up to.
David Isay is the founder of StoryCorps and author of All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. He's in town for an address tonight to Arts and Letters Live at the Dallas Museum of Art. Dave, thank you so much for spending this hour
really
with us.
It was really fun. Thanks, Chris.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bilotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast, and our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about Think, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcast at kera.org/think. Email comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.